The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, this is Brett King. I am live from Toronto today. It's actually reasonable weather here today. Maybe it's global warming again. Who knows? I'm actually have to give a shout out to Sapient Nitro, who's one of our friends in the network. They've very kindly lent us some space to broadcast the radio show from here in Toronto. We have in the studio with us today Rizwan Kalfan, the Chief Digital Officer for TD Bank. Do you want to say hello, Riz?
Good afternoon, everyone.
Yeah, can we just we'll just turn that's on? Okay, good. Things are so we'll get to Riz one in a moment, but just before that, we just got some news for everybody. There's obviously the neobank space, tier two neobanks or a second tranche of neobanks is moving. Mondo launched with their public beta today. Unfortunately, they've had a few issues, so hopefully those guys can get those sorted out pretty quickly. I'm not saying that others don't have issues, but there's also some news that Standard Chartered has invested $28 million in a Vietnamese mobile money firm. It's not the first time that a big player has gone into Vietnam and invested in mobile money. Wing Bank with ANZ happened there some years ago. I think that's probably 10 years ago now. So that is some of the news that's happening there. In terms of some of the other stuff that's happening, don't forget that we have the Finovate FinDeva conference coming up on March 29th in New York City. You can use the if you go to New York 2016 findever.com. That's FINDEVR.com. I'm having trouble talking today. And New York 2016 findever.com and use the code BBanksDevR20. They could have come up with a simpler discount code, BBanksDevR20, for a 20% discount on registration. If you've got any questions, just go to breakingbanks.com. The link will be there on the site. Finovate Springer course is coming up in San Jose. I will be there presenting Movin, and hopefully we'll have a mystery guest with us there. We'll see how that goes. And also don't miss Next Bank USA in Silicon Valley on May 12th, and use the code BB25 for a 25% discount for that. There is some news as well. USAA announced its integration with Coinbase for account holders to connect and view their balances on Coinbase on the USAA site. We're starting to see some traction there too. Also some news on LendUp. We might get to that a little bit later in the show, and hopefully we can have Sasha Ola from LendUp back on the show in the next couple of weeks to sort of tell us about the developments there. All right, so let's jump into this right now, and we'll ask Rizwan to join us formally in the conversation.
Oh, thanks, Brett. I appreciate the invite, although I have been looking forward to this invite for a long time. Welcome to Toronto. Spring-like weather here, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Absolutely. It's great weather, actually. So you're with TD Bank, and you are the Chief Digital Officer. What does a Chief Digital Officer do for TD Bank?
It's a fun job. The title was probably a year and a half or so. I'd say at the highest level, it's about taking innovation, using digital technology, and at a high level, transforming the entire bank. I think that would be the highest priority. Banks are transforming based on customer expectations, innovation in the marketplace, non-traditional and traditional competitive landscape shifts. But I'd say that would be the priority. Having said that, you know, our customers, you know, are interacting with us on a digital basis and growing it at an exponential rate. And that's exciting because it creates new opportunities for us. So part of the transformation is how do we actually deliver convenience and service to our customers as their expectations change.
Right. So, I mean, I want to get to that, but before we get to that, you didn't start as the chief digital officer for TD. You started in investment banking. So how did you go from, because you're at Citi, back 2002, something like that?
No, even earlier than that.
Even earlier than that? Yeah. Okay. What was your first job in banking, actually?
Well, I was a fresh grad from University of Toronto as a CompSci graduate. And I started as a developer, writing very simple code, you know, to automate reports folks were manually reconciling.
That's why he's the chief digital officer now, right? Because he can cut code. Someone said, we need an executive who knows what this programming is all about, right? So that's very cool. So when did you make the leap then to the sort of the business side of it?
Well, you know, while I had a technical background, I always, felt obliged to learn about the business. And as you said, I landed on the trading floor right out of school. No real intention to become a trader or be in investment banking. It was just, you know, pure luck. But right away, decided I wanted to learn more about the business. At that time, it was a complex derivative business. You know, you're talking about 1993, 94. And I decided to do my CFA, the Chartered Financial Analyst, to learn more about the products. Spent most of my time arguing with traders, both in Toronto and then in New York and London. Eventually ended up in the UK. And, learned probably as much about the business as I knew about technology through that process.
Very interesting. You know, we met a few years ago.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was back, after I launched my first book, when I was working for Sapient.
Yeah.
During that time, we were talking about the possible impact of mobile, right? Because it was still fairly new. This was 2010 timeframe, right?
Yeah.
And so, obviously, a lot has happened. We're now talking about wearables and, we're talking about autonomous vehicles and all these sorts of things. Things have just seemed to have just exploded in technology terms. In respect to the changes you've seen within an organization like TD and its focus on digital, when was the aha moment for you? And then when was the aha moment for the bank that digital was important?
Great question. You're really now asking me to go back. I think the aha moment for me was when I started charging my mobile device next to my bedside. Waking up to it and going to sleep, looking at the device. It just seemed that my life had changed from that point onwards. And this was going back, I'd say, late 90s, early 2000.
Yeah.
And the evolution had started. I'd say most banks, including TD, especially at TD, it was about staying connected with the customers. And 2009, 2010 was when, you had the emergence of mobile devices on a broader basis amongst consumers. And right away, without knowingly, we came up with a mobile app.
Right.
Across our
businesses. You didn't know why you had to, but
everyone said it was a customer trend. Yeah. We're a customer-centric organization. You need to be connected to them. And, one thing led to another. There was a big debate about whether it's a revolution or an evolution that went on for a couple of years.
Yep.
But now it's clearly, it was a revolution. There is no doubt about that.
And when did TD create the chief digital officer role that you now see?
So they formally announced it a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I'm the first chief digital officer for the bank. And as I said, it doesn't feel any different because it's an exciting role.
Right.
You have the opportunity to make an impact on millions of customers who are interacting with
every
you
day.
On a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to me, I was telling somebody that I still feel like the same fresh grad, 22 years ago, because I'm excited to come to work. At that time, it was about, using technology to simplify my life and the life of people around me. And now you have the opportunity to use technology and innovation to make a significant impact on millions of our customers.
So in respect to the changes you've seen, you know, things like mobile payments that are emerging right now and, you know, other aspects, the use of the mobile app, have things gone pretty much at the rate you'd expected? Has it happened faster, mobile adoption, than you anticipated? Is it slower?
You know, I think, you know, it starts off with very high expectations. So there's two phases. The first phase
is the old gut and hype cycle,
exactly.
Right?
You know, and you know, there's some truth to that, right? In the sense that, you know, when you talk about it, and you know, you write about your expectations are yay high, and it always under delivers. And right about the time when you feel like, okay, this was just another thing, you know, the adoption takes off. At the end of the day, I think staying connected with the customer and trying to figure out, you know, how best to exceed their expectations is probably the right way to answer that question.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you guys introduced in August 2014, you introduced mobile account opening.
Yes.
You were one of the first major banks, not just in Canada, but in North America to introduce this. I think USAA was probably the first, and you wouldn't call them necessarily a major. But yeah. You know, what did that mean for the bank in terms of how successful has that been? You know, what was the take-up? You know, can you talk about, for example, what percentage of account opening is done on mobile?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it started with us monitoring the traffic. And right away, as soon as we saw the traffic was exponentially increasing from mobile devices, we said, well, wait a second, let's make it easier. Let's create a responsive site that caters to our mobile customers. And it's been a huge hit. Today, you know, I'd say 25-30% of our traffic is coming from mobile devices and growing, you know, on an annual basis. I'd even be able to say that 20% of all our digital sales are now coming from mobile devices. So it turned out to be, again, staying connected with the customers. The customers actually gave us the hint to say, look, we're coming through mobile devices. You better have the property. We redesigned the, you know, the sales platform to, you know, accommodate the mobile customers, and right away got a lift of 20% coming straight from you know, from mobile customers, and it's growing. So, you know, from our perspective,
that's,
you know, it's been a huge hit, and it's early days. Over time, we've added new products to it. We started very simple with, you know, checking and
we don't use the word simple on this show. No,
yeah.
Just kidding.
I think I learned that word from you.
No, it's just a bit of a moving joke there. Okay. As well. That's okay. And that's fine.
And, you know, you know, what really occurred to us is that became a platform for us to keep growing from an acquisition perspective while delivering a unique and differentiated experience.
Oh, good, good. Now, we started a partnership together. We started talking about that, you know, about a year ago, maybe a little bit more. We got boots on the ground and started working with you guys in Anger in July, which has been, I think, for both of our organizations, A, been a learning curve, and but B, been extraordinary experience. And I know everyone that's listening to the show that knows about the TD Movement partnership wants us to get to this. It's like, well, how are you guys working together? So maybe why don't you give your perspective on how that deal came together, and what was, from your point of view, seeing this sort of fintech space emerge, what was the driver in you? Because you've partnered with a few fintechs now. What was the driver for you as a chief digital officer to start some of these partnerships with organizations like us at Movement?
Yeah, I'll give you my recollection as to how this dialogue started between the two of us. It goes back to being at the U.S. Open.
That's right. That's right.
At Flushing Meadows, watching the semifinals. And I think at that time, you had actually gravitated from online to mobile.
Yeah.
And right away, that sounded really interesting. And I wanted to see the app that you were developing. You know, what really excited me was, you know, that with the mobile app, you had the distribution.
Yeah.
You know, which was massive compared to online, where you had to go seek for distribution.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, the idea that starting a relationship, you know, by downloading a mobile app completely turned the whole relationship with a customer or a prospect, you know, on its head. And I thought that was exciting. And so I kept in touch with you. And subsequently, as soon as I saw the app, I'm like, you know, this is an experience that we need to deliver to our customers. I'm really excited, you know, about our soon to come launch. Having said that, there's lots of learnings. You know, for me, you know, fintech and startups, you know, are part of our innovation ecosystem. you know, we had to embrace and foster innovation internally. You know, we have an ideation platform that encourages everybody to start to put their ideas out. We've created partnerships with incubators like, you know, the one in Communitech at Waterloo. We have TD Lab there, you know, which is a bunch of students, you know, prototyping, ideating. Yeah. But fintech and startups, you know, based on our relationship, is now a key part of the innovation ecosystem. You know, taking advantage of innovation where I felt that the fintechs and the startups, you know, had, you know, somewhat of a credibility gap, somewhat of a scale gap. And, you know, partnering with them, the banks could actually, you know, have a win-win situation.
Yeah.
And our partnership is going to be, you know, a hit with our customers, and it's a win-win. Now, the challenges here are that banks have this urge to customize everything. You know, and I've had that urge with your offering and had to stop really hard to make sure that we don't completely customize your experience.
Sure.
And I think the idea of actually having our mobile platform and Moovin's app as a companion app,
yeah,
with the integration at the design level and the UX level, you know, makes a lot of sense for both of us.
Yes.
You can keep innovating and I can actually keep adopting that innovation and putting it out to our customers. And that's a philosophy, you know, that we've established, and I'm planning to use the same philosophy with the other startups and fintechs that we're working with.
Okay. Now, just before the break, we've got a break coming up in a couple of minutes, but I wanted to talk about, and we'll probably get back to this Moovin thing in just after the break, but you're also involved in the DIACC, which is a pretty significant initiative, as sort of a global lead on identity. Can you tell us what the DIACC is?
If I can remember. There's a lot of acronyms there. I think it's the Digital Identity Authentication Council of Canada.
Yeah,
I'm a board member there. And the idea is that in Canada, the public sector and the private sector have come together almost as a think tank to think about standards in terms of promoting a digital identity ecosystem.
Yep.
You know, and to me, you know, I'm a firm believer that that's going to be key for us, you know, to promote the digital economy in Canada. Having standards makes it a lot easier, you know, in my opinion, you know, for everybody to participate. So be inclusive, at the same time get wider adoption. You know, we think we have a good set of standards that we've written up. We want participation. We're looking for solutions to bring those standards to life. But it's going to be a huge customer, consumer, citizen need that drives all kinds of conveniences and experiences for consumers in Canada.
So what I'm going to do is, we've got Brian Rommel coming up after the break. I might just get you to stick around after the break, if you don't mind, for a few minutes, and we'll see what Brian has to say about identity and some of the things that he's seeing emerge. He works on the Apple Pay payment stuff and so forth as well. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, are banks going to be the identity brokers of the future, or is someone like Apple going to be the identity broker of the future? Maybe we can have that that conversation. You're listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We have Rizwan Kalfon here. Just before the break, before we go to the break, I was in Miami last week with Temenos with their innovation jam session. We had a lot of fun with all these people from all over Latin America that came into Miami. JP Nichols is going to be in Singapore for their innovation jam on the 22nd. So check that out at temenos.com. As you know, Temenos is our primary sponsor. We're very grateful for that. So we're just going to go to a quick break. We'll be right back after this short break.
What do you want your world to look like in 2030? This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we're joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
Hi, it's Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramez Naam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on the Google self-driving car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, "We're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots. Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time." Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, you are with Brett King. This is Breaking Banks. If you follow the show and you'd like to participate by Twitter, then don't forget our hashtag is hashtag Breaking Banks. Ask us a question. I know we have one from Gayla Boscovich. She said, "Who's going to be the provider of digital identity?" Which is sort of a question we asked before the break. So we'll get to that in a moment. Riz, just before we get to that, I know you wanted to cover off some. You had a question for me.
Yeah, right? I thought this was going to be a chat, and you've been blasting all the questions
at
me.
I'm the host. That's what I've got to do, right?
No, you never finished answering, what do you think of our relationship from a fintech perspective working with a bank?
You choose this time when we're on the air with 100,000 people listening to ask me this question.
I like honesty.
No, actually, it's been a great working relationship, particularly you and I. We work very well together, so that's made it a lot easier. But I've made no secret of the fact that not only working with TD, but with some of the other banks, that the challenges that we face generally aren't with the digital team, but they're periphery teams like the procurement team or the risk team or the accessibility team. You know, this is where, because as a startup, we're lean, fast, you know, we want to get stuff done, but we're a little bit unfinished. We're a little bit, you know, let's just move, let's just keep moving, because that's how Startupville works. You just got to keep shipping product. You know, I think probably where, and I don't know if your other fintechs have found the same process, but that gateway, which is procurement in terms of the way we get paid and the way contracting is done, we seem to spend a lot of time on that as a startup when actually we're not really good at that stuff. You know, we're good at, you know, building mobile apps and stuff like that. Having said that, despite all of that, it's actually been a fantastic experience, and we've learned things working with you guys this time around that I think you know, have become a model for us and have helped us as an organization learn tremendously so that we can replicate this at other banks around the world, which we are doing. So in that respect, you know, TD has been very forgiving. And been a great partner.
Yeah, no, I
for
feel
us.
The same
so,
way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, so thank you.
And it's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. Does that answer the question? Okay.
Yeah. On air.
You have any other questions while we're at it?
I have, but I know we have some other exciting guests here, okay. So I don't want to take over your show.
No, that's true. That's good. But one day you can come in and be the guest host. We have guest hosts on the show from time to time. So let's introduce Brian Rommel. You guys will know Brian. You know, he's been on the show before. Brian is a payments expert. He is a Apple Pay enthusiast, commentates on Apple Pay around the world, writes on Forbes. He's also part of the Around the Coin podcast. Brian Rommel, welcome back to Breaking Banks.
Thank you, Brett. A pleasure being here.
Oh, it's great to have you back, dude. So, listen, did you hear, just before the break, we were talking about this, the role of identity and how, you know, this is being impacted. You know, Canada has this digital identity initiative. You know, Apple and Facebook and others have now sort of elements of digital identity. Apple has iTouch integrated into their platform. They have the iTunes account for purchasing. You know, there really is an identity layer to that. We see some similar things happening with Facebook and Facebook Connect. So do you think that there's going to emerge a winner in terms of the identity stakes, Brian?
You know, it's really a funny sort of question, because it is never going to be one single entity, I believe, that's going to be the provisioner of the identity, other than a government. And then it's going to be manifested in some form in electronics and software and hardware. You know, a government is ultimately going to want to identify its citizens. In the United States, that starts with the driver's license, or the birth certificate maybe, but really the driver's license. And there are initiatives right now to create encryption in such a way in the phone, very similar to the secure enclave that's in the latest iPhones, to allow for permanent digital identity. Where that goes now in the current state of affairs with encryption and unencryption, I'm not certain, but ultimately that's the direction it's going to go in, I believe. It'll start.
Okay, we're going to get to that later. We're going to get to that later in the segment, but you know, that Apple FBI thing, but we'll leave Riz out of that. We don't want to, you know. You know, there is some government initiatives behind this. You know, Estonia has this digital identity program. Again, Gayla, I want to just a quick shout out to, she's participating in the show via Twitter today, so thanks for your comments. So this is one where, you know, if you think about this, your digital identity, your persona of who you are in the mobile space, on the social media space, it really doesn't have a geographic boundary. So, you know, there's got to be obviously a government link where a government says, we know who you are, particularly if you're doing something, say, you know, paying tax or, you know, doing a transaction with a government department. But outside of that, you know, who is the trusted party? You know, who makes sense as a trusted party for, say, identity brokerage? Maybe, Riz, what are your thoughts on that?
So I'd agree with Brian. By the way, hi, Ryan. In the sense that it is an ecosystem, and you need, you know, various participants to come together, both from the public sector and the private sector.
Yeah.
You know, the way I see it is, the winner is probably going to be the one that has control of the
most.
I'd
argue that the banks have a significant role to play, because today, you know, consumers trust their banks. And, you know, we go to earlier.
Sorry, the most what? Has control of the most what, Brian?
Oh, I'm sorry. They have the control of the most eyeballs or people, right? So in a sense, who has a trusted relationship today? The bank is essentially the epitome of trust. So a bank is going to be in that equation one way or the other. But if you disembody trust from payments, and then it becomes more or less a telephone directory. So really, the trust factor is an ecosystem, as you said. It's probably going to be a struggle to begin with, in my view.
Yeah, and you know what I'd add is, to that point, is that we have a number of factors coming together. You know, the emergence of the shared economy is going to actually drive the need for digital identity.
Right.
Today, you know, when a landlord rents, you know, their place out to a potential renter, they want to do a check on them. They might do a check on the credit bureau. Well, that's expensive. It's slow.
Right.
You know, why not ping you know, to the renter's bank and say, hey, Brett's, you know, trying to rent my place. You know, I need so-and-so information from him. Is this good? Or even not exchange the information, but just confirm the information that's been provided.
Yep.
You know, that's a massive step, in my opinion, in terms of driving digital economy. In Canada, one thing we have, you know, which exists is that, you know, you can actually use your banking credentials to actually log into and authenticate into a number of government properties.
Okay.
Right. And so there's, I think, if I remember correctly, 150 or 160 properties, you know, from, you know, your taxes to even applying to for a fishing license. You can actually
use your banking credentials.
Exactly. Wow. And so there is a precedent here. So you're moving from authentication to persistent authentication to digital ID. And that's a natural evolution.
Yeah.
I think, again, it's banks will play a significant role, in my opinion, but it is going to be an ecosystem where, you know, everybody has to kind of come together.
So, of course, there's a new initiative in the Payment Services Directive version 2 in Europe, which sort of is going almost the opposite to this, where you've got to explicitly as a customer approve, you know, your identity data being sent from one, you know, entity to another. But it would appear like, you know, that almost flies in the face of the use cases for, you know, identity is getting more and more portable. It's not becoming more of, you know, we can't put more security up, but things like your date of birth and your address, you know, I mean, this data is sort of publicly available on a number of things now. It's not, no longer secure, so you need to start thinking about identity in a composite manner that's a little different.
And the composite manner actually protects privacy.
Right.
Right. I mean, you put the consumer in the driver's seat and empower them. You know, I actually believe the first evolution of this might not even be the exchange of any data, because you can actually just confirm or not confirm.
Right.
Right. What you're asking for. Yeah. And I think that's a really nice transition way into actually getting into the space.
Brian, what are you?
I would interject also, is technology is most definitely going to be blockchain-like. You know, not Bitcoin, but certainly blockchain, because I think that makes the most relevant sense of where our identities would be harboring, and, you know, ephemerally within a blockchain.
Hi, it's Brett King here. I wanted to reach out to you personally to let you know about my new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out the first week of May. I'm so excited about this book. It's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, of course, through your local bookstore. But this book has taken 2 years of my life. Thousands of hours of research have gone behind it. We've got some amazing contributions from the likes of Alex Lightman, Andy Lark from Xero, JP Rangaswamy from Deutsche Bank and Salesforce. We have interviews with Ramesh Nam, an award-winning sci-fi author, roboticist Elliot Mack, Dr. Giovanni Santostasi on The Activated Self, Dr. Hugh Herr from MIT, Brad Templeton on the Google self-driving car. Listen, if you enjoyed my podcast, you're excited about the future and the opportunities it presents, then Augmented is going to be a book you're really going to enjoy. Robert Scoble, the West Coast commentator on technology, he said, we're in the midst of a huge wave of technological change, augmented reality, self-driving cars, human-like robots. Brett King not just properly catalogues all of these things, but he tells us what it all means, that soon we will be augmented. His look at what's happening will be my Bible for a long time. Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and pre-order it. I'd really appreciate your support.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, some technical issues there. We're back. Brian, are you back with us?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. And did you remember the question I asked just before we lost the connection? So
I probably didn't hear it.
So how are these guys going to play together? How's government, banks, players like Apple? Where's do you think the commonality is in terms of identity management or the way the identity hooks these things together?
Good question. You know, I don't know if it got cut off. I think the technology is ultimately going to be blockchain or blockchain-like. So that's going to be the rallying point. And it seems like the initiative is going to always start with technology and then government sort of catches up. I don't think it's ever going to work. Government does it and then technology catches up. So typically, I thought this is going to play out with Apple showing the world that they can secure a phone to such a level that it's okay to harbor some portion of your identity there, or perhaps in a cloud managed by a technology firm or a government or even a software firm like a Facebook. But I think it's hazy now. So I think we're writing the rules right now as we speak and in society.
Absolutely. So listen, at this point, we've got to say goodbye to Rizwan. He's got a chief digital office to run for TD Bank. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure, and nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, hopefully very soon after we launch together here formally, because we're doing lots of testing and stuff now, but hopefully after that, we can get you back on and talk about the successful launch and how that's all gone.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much, Rizwan. So that was Rizwan Kalfan, from the Chief Digital Officer for TD Bank. Okay, so Brian, let's shift gears right now. And, we talked about this on the show last week, but 2 weeks ago, but this Apple Pay FBI thing, Apple's made their submission on this. Where do you think... what are your thoughts on that overall? Does it set some precedents? Is it a good precedent? What do you think is going to happen?
My gosh, Brad, this is tearing the country
ball.
Apart on so
I know
many
it
levels.
Is, isn't it?
It's a difficult thing, and I understand the premise on both sides of the table. And really, we need to have this give and take. It actually has to happen. I wish it would be. Maybe not as messy as it appears to be right now, but I really think the precedence has to be set, not just in the United States, but around the world. Where does the dividing line stand? And I don't think anybody really knows exactly where that line is, because, Moore's Law is moving much faster than human intelligence, emotions, fears, ambitions. And hopefully we can all rally around this and feel through it and find what the proper way to deal with this is. Certainly in the United States, we have a constitution. There is certain demarcation.
Really? There's a constitution in the U.S.?
In theory. But around the world, the constitutions and other official documents may be less defined. So Apple, from their standpoint, is saying, listen, if we do this under this circumstance, it's going to be asked of us in other regimes and other realms that may not be as friendly to free speech. So that's what's at play here, and it's an interesting time.
So I want to introduce, just before I do this, actually, just before I invite Mary Wozinski to join us, I'll have to check the pronunciation of her name in a second when she joins, but did you see, there's a Australian comedian called Jim Jefferies, and he does this skit on gun control. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
So he has this takeaway one line, which in terms of the Constitution, I think is perfect. He says, yeah, we have a Constitution in Australia too. He says, I don't know what it says. and I think this is sort of generally the way most countries sort of think of their constitution. America is very proud of their constitution. It really does dominate a lot of conversation and the way certain decisions are made. But yeah, shout out to Jim Jeffries there. So Mary, welcome back to Breaking Banks.
Hi, thank you.
Now, you're, of course, a writer for American Banker magazine, American Bankers for Bank Think, and you write on technology and fintech. Wisniewski? How do I say you?
You got it, yeah.
Oh,
American
okay.
is Wisniewski, but there's some Polish way, too.
Yeah, there you go. So that's great. So now, you know, what is American Banker got a position on this Apple, you know, FBI thing, or are you just reporting the news?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you're speaking to. I would say there's a lot of people with strong opinion on this, and that opinion would be like, this is like a huge thing that's putting, identity, like, it's a scary issue. And so I don't want to speak for all of American Banker writers and editors, but I would say it's a big concern, mostly for staff members.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. If you take an organizational approach to this, you could say, well, okay, you know, there's legal implications, yada, yada, yada. But then if you're a personal if you take a personal approach to this, you say, well, you know, I don't want open access to my information. And if you take a constitutional view, then is it search and seizure? Is it, is there a First Amendment issue? It's not exactly clear cut, is it?
No. And, we ran a really strong piece from Sharian at Experian who really like highlighted all, you know, some of the ramifications that could happen because of this.
Fantastic piece.
It's just, you know, really edgy, serious stuff.
Yeah, no, we had him on the show actually just after he'd done that piece. It was fantastic. I thought it was some great writing. So if you haven't checked it out, Cherry and Abraham, go to American Banker and do a search on Cherry and Mobile. Mobile banking, I guess. I think that's probably, I can't remember the title of the article. Can you, have you got it there, Mary?
It's got. I don't have it. It's got to have Apple FBI in the headline.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So. Okay. So listen. We got a break coming up in a couple of minutes. But and after the break, I want to talk about Alexa and some of the stuff we're seeing there, guys. But before we get to that, in terms of some of the other players that have come to support Apple in this, like Microsoft and so forth, it seems to be that generally speaking, the tech community has sided with Apple. And that in itself, I think, is fairly unique. What do you think, Brian?
I'm really heartened by the fact that they can centralize around one theme. I think it's important because, again, it's a slippery slope with anything. And I understand, like I said, both sides of it. But the tech community is going to look at this from a position of, if we do this, then we're going to have to do that, and then we're going to have to do that. And it's never going to be a one-off. Once the proof of concept is there, it's going to be reiterated. And I can imagine how companies like Google, Microsoft, and Facebook view this. It would become almost unmanageable to them at some point on an international scale.
So we've actually seen this. We've got a precedent for this, which is FACTA, right?
Yes.
If you think about FACTA, which is the IRS's requirements for banks, foreign banks to report to the IRS, there are banks that I have in relationships with in Asia, for example, who I can't. And I shouldn't say this on the air because I'll be found out. But if I expose my U.S. address to them, they drop me as a client. right? Because they can't do, they can't handle all of the additional workload that's being created by the IRS's requested, sort of reporting requirements from these banks for U.S. citizens. Now, if you extrapolate that, imagine that China now has a factor of their own. Imagine that the UK or the EU has a factor of their own, right? And a factor of their own. And then do apply that to the Apple FBI situation that you've got to have a backdoor for everyone. I mean, when we talked about this on the show a couple of weeks ago with Cherry, and he's like, as soon as you put that backdoor in, every, government, service that wants access to it is going to say. Now, there is some provision in the U.S. law where it says if you provide that to the U.S. government, you can't provide it to foreign governments. But I think, that's even harder to enforce, right? So
It's insurmountable. I mean, when you look at the amount of requests and the amount of crimes that take place on any given day around the world that might involve a cellular device, it's mind-boggling. So I feel for both sides. And like I said, this is one of the issues of our generation here that's going to have to be, decided. It's not going to fix everybody. It's not going to make everybody happy, but it's going to be decided one way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard good arguments for both sides of this, but I think ultimately it's untenable. So listen, guys, we're not going to have another break just because we had that outage before with Skype giving us some trouble. So let's talk about Alexa, Amazon Echo, and some of the voice stuff that's going on. You're pretty hot on this too, Mary, aren't you? There seems to be a lot of talk about this. Capital One announced that they're doing an Alexa integration. We launched something in December, for Moovin, where we did some integration. You can ask for your balance through Alexa. Where do you guys think this is going? Maybe Mary, you can talk about voice from an institutional adoption perspective.
Yeah, so definitely. So Cap One made all the splash, but as you said, Moovin, and then Citi, FIS, Wells Fargo, all testing it. Basically, I think, you have a lab, you have budget to experiment, you're probably testing this because the thought is, oh, maybe this is the next hot consumer device, so you want to be where, your customers are. But with voice, it's so intriguing because, I interview a lot of people on this and, some believe this is like the future of navigation for even, banking apps, because then you have banks like BBVA that have, Siri-like interactions for their customers already. So it's more like my voice is my navigation.
Your voice is your password. Did you remember that movie?
And I heard when people used to make that I don't know how to say it, but it would unlock the app if you had to say some awkward phrase like that. I guess
that would go
over so well.
we see Alexa, Google Now, Siri, Cortana. There's a lot of different action in this. Brian, do you think this is going to end up like the payment space where, if you have a specific OS, then you're going to go with that voice? Or do you think we're going to start to see something like Alexa, Amazon Echo, which isn't really OS-based or, phone-based, sort of become something that you can integrate into multiple devices?
Brett, great question. I'm predicting that in the next 10 years, 50% of all computer and human interaction is going to take place via the voice. We have this interface that has millions of years of evolution. We call it speech. And we forced ourselves as human beings to go mechanical and pound on keys to communicate with computers simply because the computers didn't understand our volition, our intent, and our ability to communicate with them. And we're at this inflection and convergence point where continuous speech can be decoded by computers, primarily because it's in the cloud. I mean, Alexa is a disembodied spirit. It's primarily a software system that sits in the cloud. So is Cortana, Google Now, and Siri. The actual device, the Echo device, is the manifestation of the physical body, if you will. That physical body is going to be autonomous at some point. It's going to be a robot, and it's going to have voice control. I give this example, and I can go further, but if I wanted to know what the traffic condition was for my commute, I can just ask Alexa, what's the traffic like? And she'll tell me, 20 minutes, there'll be some traffic here, an accident, and even at some point recommend a way around it. To try to do that with the app today, and no matter what apps you use, there are cognitive loads and mechanical loads on you as a human being. The mechanical load is moving your fingers around. Cognitive load is your brain trying to figure this stuff out. So it's going to eliminate that. So that's the superset. The subset is what I'm calling voice commerce and voice payments. And that is already happening. Voice commerce is happening right now.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
Amazon doesn't have it under control.
No. But we see a great example of that with Echo when you see the Alec Baldwin ad where he says, order me some Brescianis, or whatever, and, Alexa repeats a previous order that's in the order book. So that's voice commerce. And before long, that's going to be, Alexa, book me a flight to Toronto on next Friday in first class, use the corporate account to pay.
Exactly. And just payments, too, are going to evolve in that way because, and it seems like right now it's going to be analogous to how we do payments today. And I say that's probably not going to be the case. This will be its own development, and I'm predicting a lot. In fact, I'm predicting that we don't even know the companies that will dominate it. They're in a garage right now. Because these are really open platforms. I've already programmed. I have 23 things that I've coded for Alexa that are voice
That's
payments
awesome.
and voice commerce related. And I'm testing it. I, in fact, just programmed a room service app for a large boutique hotel chain that saw my article I wrote, and they said, "Can we use this?" And I said, "Sure, let me program something." It's not that complex. It's not extremely easy. It's not a full API. But imagine every hotel room, with permission, of course, you have this 24-hour device that you could say, Alexa, open the windows, turn on the lights, set it to 71 degrees, order me, a taco. This is where it's going.
That's cool. Order me a taco.
Yeah. And the payments will be integrated, but in other ways, you're looking at what is going on in the back end, and there's a whole lot going on in the back end. The intelligence and the machine learning and the AI is going to have to know what preference of payment do you want to use. Do you want to use Movin? Do you want to use another form of payment? Do you want to integrate with your bank? This is uncharted territory. In fact, I think it's the biggest payment revolution that we will see in our lifetimes. It's far beyond NFC. It's far beyond Apple Pay. It's far beyond blockchain.
Oh yeah,
it's quite big, and it's an exciting time.
So I don't know, Brian, I haven't sent you a copy yet, and Mary, I know I'm going to do this as well for you. We talked about this earlier in the week, of the new book, Augmented, but I actually have an entire chapter talking about the development of, voice-based avatars and personal AIs and sort of the way they'll do. And I think we're going to get to the point by middle of next decade where 60-70% of commerce will be machine-to-machine commerce or agent-to-agent commerce, where you'll delegate an agent. So you won't swipe tap. You won't put it in, you won't type in your card number into your browser. This stuff will be, you get your agent to do it, right? And your agent will be Alexa or Siri or something similar.
I'd be excited to read that. I mean, I'm a big fan of all your books, and this is absolutely the direction. And I love the idea of the intelligent agent or avatar, because really that's ultimately what we're going to be doing. And it's not going to give up with the physical world. The physical world will still be out there. It's just going to be a layer on top of it. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mary.
I was just going to say, because, you see all these surveys, and usually the two major reasons why people aren't, like, mobile banking are, one, security concerns, or two, like, their finger, like, their, I hate to use the term fat fingers, but that's what everyone says, so, like, that gets in the way. So when you're using your voice, I mean, I wonder, how much lift that can do even in the short time term.
Yeah, and it also adds that that additional layer of a voice-based authentication, which you can incorporate into an experience biometrically, which is certainly more secure than a password, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think the biometric aspect of it is definitely another dimension to it. And, you know, when you look at what you're actually trying to achieve with anything on your computer, a lot of it is commerce-related, but it is so indirect that sometimes we don't even connect it. We do a search here, we think about something there, and maybe a few weeks later we do some shopping. An intelligent agent like you're talking about will track stuff like that and give you the results of information you may have even forgotten about during a search. So it's very, very powerful.
Yeah. Now, so I actually tried to think of a way to capture all of this integration with artificial intelligence, your personal AI, your agents, all of that, and how that was. And I came up with the concept of a live stream, right? A stream of interactions that's happening digitally. I don't know if that's going to fly, but...
I love that. That's a great thing. And let's not forget, we're not doing away from the display. The display is not going away. It's just the mechanical load and the cognitive load on the human being is going to diminish, and the machines are going to do more. But those machines are going to be very powerful because Alexa could not work unless the cloud was in there. Alexa is just a conduit for something much greater that's out there. And that's going to be where the big struggles are. You were talking about the platforms. The platforms are going to be up in the cloud, and they're going to be, you know, decoding our voice and interpreting our volition, and sooner or later reading our facial expressions. We have 118 muscles in our face, and you and I can't see them when we're on a computer. But soon that will be decoded, and other things will come from that, and it'll be commerce-related too.
But we're already starting to see pattern recognition where, you know, robots like Pepper can do facial recognition, tell whether you're happy or sad. So there's huge opportunities for this. Hey, Mary. Cap One's announced their initiative. I know USAA is playing with this and a few others. What do you think we're going to see in the next year or so in terms of voice interaction?
Well, you mean like are more banks going to roll this out?
Yeah.
I definitely think so. I mean, there's huge question marks. I guess it's a bold move just because of, like, you know, banks are risk averse, and this is opening the question marks on, like, how are we IDing people when there could be multiple people in the same room as Echo. So, I mean, that's something to slow down, you know, what they're going to put out. But, you know, I'm getting this, you know, you get into a lab, there's a lot of exotic devices, but this one's been like a darling in the media and seemingly with consumers. So, you know, I bet you all the digital banking leaders will want to put something out, especially like once one big bank does it, they all want to do it too.
Yeah, absolutely. So listen, while we're just about to wrap up, we've got about a minute left. First of all, thank you, Brian and Mary, for joining the show. It's been great. Sorry about the little technical hiccup we had in the middle, but we had a good show otherwise. But if you guys are regular listeners to the show, you know what I'm going to ask right now. Check out augmentedbook.com or go to Amazon and check out the new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane. We're launching it. It ships first week of May. We're going all out for this to try and get this as a bestseller, even on New York Times potentially. So it's all about pre-orders for that. So if you enjoy the show and you can have a look at the book, please order it, pre-order to help us out there. Brian and Mary, thanks for joining the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so I'll make sure I get you a copy of the book too, so you can have a look over it. It's not a banking book this time. It's a real sort of futurist book.
Awesome.
All right, and Brian, where can people read your stuff?
You can find me on applepay.expert. Just type that into your browser. It'll bring you wherever I happen to be.
Absolutely fantastic. Okay, well, thanks again to you guys, and thanks again to our sponsor, Temenos. Check them out at temenos.com, and we will be back next week with another session of Breaking Banks. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.